Hand of the Cause of God, William Sears, reads to the little children stories from the Dawnbreakers, stories taken from the book written by Zoe Meyer and illustrated by Carl Scheffler. Let's join the children.
Hello, children.
Hello, Mr. Sears.
It's wonderful to be with all of you, and I'm sure we're going to have a marvelous journey together to Persia, to the land of the birth of the Baha'i faith, called the cradle of our faith. The Bab was born there, Baha'u'llah was born there, and the early heroes and heretics. And that, of course, is a story that we're going to hear about the Dawnbreakers, how our faith began right from the beginning. Our beloved guardian, Shoghi Effendi, said that all Americans should read these wonderful stories, that it would inspire them in their private lives, in their arts, and in their literature, and that these stories would even bring hope and encouragement to a sad and disillusioned world. So, you can see how important they are and what an exciting time we're going to have together. You know, I had the great joy of going to Persia and visiting many of these historic places we're going to hear about. So every now and then I've added a little story that I remembered myself from the Dawnbreakers in my trip. Only a few, but they were so beautiful that I thought they'd make you eager to read the big book, The Dawnbreakers, as soon as you're grown up enough and old enough. That wonderful treasure house of wonders and words. So, let's begin our magical, wonderful journey to the land where the Baha'i faith was born, where the herald of the faith was born and its founder, Baha'u'llah, where they grew up as children, until finally the day arrived when the whole world was made different and happier because of them. So, are you ready? Now remember, these are true stories, but even so, I thought it would be very nice if we could feel as though we were sailing off from America to Persia on a magic carpet and landing gently in the land of the cradle of our faith. Listen. This is Chapter 1, Sheikh Ahmad's Secret. Many years ago, there lived in Persia a man who knew a very wonderful secret. Now, perhaps you wouldn't think it was a secret at all, because it was written in a book. I mean, everybody could read it. But those who did read it didn't understand just what it meant. Of course, Sheikh Ahmad understood, because he had studied this book a great deal, and he prayed to understand it. And the secret he found there in that book made him so happy that he wanted to tell everyone about it. Would you like to know the secret? Well, in this book, which was called the Quran, it told that God would send a new teacher to the world, a very great teacher, like Jesus and Muhammad. You know, we only know a little bit about God because he's so much greater than we are and so very wonderful. Sometimes we're so busy taking care of ourselves and having a good time that we don't even think about God. We forget that we wouldn't even be alive if God didn't give us life. So once in a while, God sends one of these divine teachers, one of these wonderful people to the earth, to remind people about himself, God. And these teachers are like him. They have his qualities. And they show us exactly how God would like to have us live here on earth. Jesus was one of these teachers. Some of us know about him and have read about him in the Bible. And others know about Muhammad and have read about him in the Quran. Now, it was in the Quran, which Muhammad wrote long ago, that Sheikh Ahmad read about the new teacher who was coming. He was called the Promised One. That's because God had promised that he would come. Of course, other people read about the Promised One in the Quran, too, and they knew he was coming sometime. But here's the difference between them and Sheikh Ahmad. When Sheikh Ahmad read the words, he felt very sure that it was time right now for the Promised One to come, almost immediately. And the other people thought, oh, sure, the Promised One's going to come, but he probably won't come for a long time yet. Sheikh Ahmed felt as he read the words that the Promised One was living on the earth at that very time that he was. Imagine how exciting that must have been. And he knew that he had to go out and find the Promised One and then tell everybody else about him, because surely everyone would want to hear good news like that. At least you'd think they would. Now, to do this, Sheikh Ahmed had to leave his home and his family and travel all over the country. Of course, in those days, there weren't any telephones you could call somebody up and give them the good news. You couldn't listen to the radio. You couldn't read the newspapers. They didn't have any of those things such as we have. There weren't even trains to carry the mail. And, of course, no airplanes at all. So if anyone wanted to visit people and to tell people something, you had to go out where the people were, and very often on foot. So let's imagine that we're going with Sheikh Ahmed on this journey. Are you ready? Remember, we're going to have to walk much of the way, maybe ride a horse once in a while, or even a donkey. And at night, we won't be able to go to a comfortable hotel or a motel for food and rest, that sort of thing, because there were no such hotels as we have now. At that time, they were called caravanserai, and we wouldn't think they were very comfortable at all. But I'll tell you something, they were wonderful places for the travelers to meet and talk together and have an exciting time. Besides, Sheikh Ahmed didn't mind being uncomfortable. He knew he was doing exactly what God wanted him to do. And he was so happy that the people would listen and that they wanted to know about God and about the Promised One. And wherever he went, they came in great numbers to hear Sheikh Ahmed talk, to hear him tell them about the Promised One who might be around them right at that time. And Sheikh Ahmed would read to them from the Quran, because though many of them were grown up, many of them couldn't read, you see. They didn't have schools such as we have now. And after Sheikh Ahmed had read to them, then he would tell them about the Promised One and how they would know him when he did come. And they say it was very thrilling to listen to him because he was a very sweet talker. And news about Sheikh Ahmed as a result of that traveled all over the country. And even the king, the Shah, heard about it. He's the ruler of the country. And so he invited Sheikh Ahmed to come and visit him. Now this made a lot of people jealous when they heard that, because he was getting to be famous. And even the king liked to hear him talk. So they urged their friends and their relatives not to listen anymore to Sheikh Ahmed at all. And sometimes they tried to quarrel with Sheikh Ahmed and have him put out of their cities, and that was cruel. But do you think this kept Sheikh Ahmed from telling the great news? Not for a moment. Many people did believe him, however, and they followed him wherever he went in crowds so that they might hear more about the Promised One, because that was a thrilling, exciting thing for them. And they all wanted to meet him if they could. And they knew that the Promised One would be a wonderful person. And they knew that he would love everybody, and he would be kind, and he would be gentle, and he'd help everybody who needed him. So they wanted to meet him and longed to find him. And after many years of traveling and teaching in this way, Sheikh Ahmed finally grew very tired. And he knew that at least he had finished the work that God had wanted him to do, to tell the people that the Promised One was coming soon, and that others now would have to carry on that work that he had begun. So Sheikh Ahmed called Sayyid Ghazim, a very dear friend of his, and he asked him if he'd travel about the country in his place and keep on telling people about the Promised One until he did come. Well, Sayyid Ghazim promised to do this, for like Sheikh Ahmed, he too wished everyone to hear this wonderful news. And he thought, you know, perhaps someday I might see this Promised One myself. And do you know something? We're going to meet the Promised One ourselves, too, very soon. Very soon. This is chapter 2, and this story is called The Young Man in the Green Turban. You remember the story of Sheikh Ahmed, who traveled all around the country telling the people that God was sending them a new teacher, and how when Sheikh Ahmed died, he left Sayyid Ghazim to carry on his work and to spread the great news of the coming of the Promised One. Perhaps that word Sayyid may seem strange to you. That means a member of the family of Muhammad, that other great teacher who gave us the Quran. Of course, Muhammad lived many years before that. But all the men who were later born in that family were called Sayyids. It was a great honor to be related to Muhammad, even if it was many, many years later. Here is another thing that Sayyid Qasim told the people. He said, this divine teacher whom God had promised was living among them at that very time. Perhaps, he said, he was even living right near where they lived, and they didn't even know him. Well, you can imagine how surprised they were to hear that kind of news, and how they must have talked about it and with each other and wondered who he was, where the promised one lived, how they could meet him. And if you and I had been there too, I think we'd have wondered, wouldn't we? I know I sure would have liked to have met him if I'd been there. And I'd have looked around plenty too. You know, it's strange, but when God sends a new divine teacher to the earth to remind people about God, only a few know him at first. Just think, they may see him on the street or in the shrine where he goes to pray and still not know him at all, because their hearts are not full of love and hope and they're not looking for him. And some of them, I'm afraid, don't know him because they're so busy thinking about themselves they just don't have time for him. Of course, there are many others who are not like these people, and their hearts are ready because they are expecting him. And Sayyid Qasim was one of those. And he was spending his whole life trying to prepare the other people to know the Promised One when they saw him. And this story now tells about a very happy day in Sayyid Qasim's life. It was the day he first met the Promised One. And he not only met him, but he heard him talk. How thrilled he must have been. Of course, I must tell you something that even Sayyid Qasim perhaps didn't know at that time. God really sent two divine messengers and teachers instead of one. The one of whom Sayyid Qasim was telling them was called the Bab. The word Bab means gate or door. And it was just as if the Bab came to open the door for Baha'u'llah, the other great teacher who came later. The Bab, of course, was the first. He was the one whom Sheikh Ahmed and Sayyid Qasim were expecting because they had read about him in the Quran. Well, one morning, very, very early at dawn, before the sun came up, Sayyid Qasim sent a messenger to a friend telling him that a very important person had arrived in Karbala, where they were living at the time, and that they must visit this person at once. When the friend arrived at Sayyid Qasim's house, he found Sayyid Qasim dressed and waiting at the door, anxious to be on his way, and they walked through the streets together. How quiet it must have been all through the city. The sun wasn't up yet, the people were still asleep, not a soul was stirring. And soon they reached a house where a young man stood in the doorway, as if he were waiting for them. He wore a green turban, and his face was so beautiful and so gentle and kind that it seemed that no one who saw him could help loving him. Haven't you seen people who you liked the very first time you saw them? Well, that's the way they felt. And coming to meet them, the young man put his arms around Sayyid Qasim and spoke to him such words of love that Sayyid Qasim couldn't only stand. All he could do was just stand there with his head bowed. He couldn't even speak. And the young man led them into the house, upstairs to a room decorated with flowers, which gave out a very lovely perfume. And here the young man told them to be seated. And he gave them a drink from a beautiful silver cup, which stood in the center of the room. You know, when you love someone very, very much, you feel so happy that you just want to be near them. You don't need to talk. Well, that's the way the two visitors felt that morning when they were in the presence of this young man. Only a few words were spoken that morning, and then the young man led them to the door, and with a wonderful smile, he bade them goodbye. How often the one who had gone with Sayyid Qasim that morning must have thought about that visit. And then, 3 days later, he saw this young man again. Sayyid Kazim was teaching a number of people from the Quran when the young man entered and sat down among them in the class. At once, Sayyid Kazim stopped speaking. When the others asked Sayyid Kazim to continue, he couldn't. He only shook his head. He pointed to the ray of sunlight which came in through the door and fell across the lap of the young man. "The truth about the Promised One," Sayyid Kazim said, "is more manifest than the ray of sunlight which has fallen on this young man's lap." You see, Sayyid Kazim knew who this young man was, and he couldn't understand why the others didn't know him. But still the others did not understand. Not even the one who had gone with Sayyid Kazim early that other morning to meet this young man. Still, in his heart, he had a strange feeling whenever he thought about him. And several times he started to ask Sayyid Kazim the young man's name. But something always seemed to stop him. Well, of course you've all guessed who the young man was, but the friend of Sayyid Kazim didn't know, even though he had come to love him with all his heart and to think of him many times a day. And one day he heard about a young man who said that he was the Bab, the Promised One, and he knew right away, just like that, that this was that young man, the one whom he had seen in Karbala and whom he had loved so very much. Of course, we're going to hear more about him next time. These stories wonderful. This one is chapter 3, and it's called The Shepherd's Dream. Well, Sayyid Kazim, as you could imagine, was very happy. He not only knew that the Promised One had come, but he had seen him with his own eyes and had visited him. What a joy it must have been to tell others about him, even though he was not yet allowed to tell them his name. But would you believe it? He found many who wouldn't listen. You know, it does no good to try to tell something to someone who doesn't want to hear it. Not only that, but sometimes they were very cruel to Sayyid Kazim and to his friends. Sayyid Kazim and a few who were his close friends went right on teaching anyway, just the same, for there were always some who were glad to listen. And he read to them from the Quran the very words which told that there would be two great teachers coming. The one whom they were expecting, who would be first, but soon afterward there would be another one. And this last one would bring his light to the whole world, not just to the country in which he lived. So that was a big story. One day at noon, Sayyid Kazim was standing in the shade of a palm tree, waiting for the people to come from the noonday prayer. Suddenly an Arab rushed up and threw his arms around him. An Arab, you know, was someone who lives in or near the great Arabian desert. And it was to the Arabs that Muhammad had come many years before and had given them the holy book, the Quran. Now, here's the strange story this Arab told Sayyid Kazim. Listen. 3 days before this, he said, while he was watching his sheep in a pasture nearby, all of a sudden, he fell asleep, and he dreamed. In his dream, he saw Muhammad, who told him to listen well and to remember every word he was told, for these words were sent from God. "If you be faithful to them," Muhammad said, "great will be your reward. But if you neglect these words, grievous retribution will befall you." That means that great trouble would come if he forgot the message. And then Muhammad told the shepherd to stay near that place. In 3 days, he said, Sayyid Qasim and his friends would come there at noon to pray. The shepherd was to greet Sayyid Qasim and to tell him that his work was almost done, that in 3 days after he returned to Karbala, he would be permitted to go to the one who was speaking, to the next world. And soon after that, the Promised One would make himself known to everyone. Now, this dream meant that in 3 days, after Sayyid Qasim returned to his home in Karbala, he, Sayyid Qasim, would die because his work was finished. You see, each of us has a work to do. If we didn't, we wouldn't be here on earth. And Sayyid Qasim was doing his work very well. Well, you can imagine how happy the shepherd's words made Sayyid Qasim, very happy. But of course they made Sayyid Qasim's friends sad to think that he was going to leave them or die. When he saw this, Sayyid Qasim said to them, "Isn't your love for me for the sake of the True One, the Promised One? Wouldn't you wish me to die so that the Promised One might be revealed to all the people?" And Sayyid Qasim talked so sweetly and so lovingly to them, and he made them so happy to think that at last they were going to know the Promised One, that they ceased to feel sad because of his leaving. And that's the way it is with us today. We never like to lose a friend, but when we do, God always sends us another one. And so Sayyid Qasim, that wonderful man, finished his work and returned to Karbala. And there, 3 days later, just as the shepherd had dreamed, Sayyid Qasim died, leaving his friends to find the Promised One and to tell the people all about him. And they did find him. And that's the story we're going to tell next time. I can hardly wait to hear that one myself. This story is about one of the very important moments in the whole history of the world. This is chapter 4, and it's called Mullah Hussein and the Bab. After the death of Sayyid Qasim, his friends seemed not to know what to do. They were confused. And it was at this time that a young man named Mullah Hussein came back to Karbala. Mullah Hussein was a very good friend of Sayyid Qasim, and he had gone to another city to carry a message for Sayyid Qasim. And immediately Mullah Hussein gathered the friends together and he said, "What did Sayyid Qasim say to you before he died? What did he tell you to do?" One of them told Mullah Hussein that Sayyid Qasim had told them to arise and leave their homes and scatter far and wide throughout the country and search for the Promised One. And another of them told them that the Promised One would guide whoever tried to find him. Mullah Hussein begged them not to wait any longer. "If Sayyid Qasim said that, why have you chosen to stay here in Karbala?" he asked them. "Why aren't you out searching for the Promised One? Your first obligation, as well as mine, is to arise and carry out the dying message of our beloved chief, Sayyid Qasim." But they all began to make excuses why they couldn't go. You know how it is. When we don't want to do something, we can always find an excuse. But the true reason is that we just don't want to do it. Well, you can see how upset that made Mullah Hussein, because he wanted them to leave immediately. And he saw that they didn't want to go. And feeling very sad, he turned away from them and started out with only his brother and his nephew for companions. Nothing was going to stop Mullah Hussein. First, Mullah Hussein felt that he should make himself ready. He should prepare himself to meet the Promised One. You know that when we're going to meet someone that we love, we like to look just as well as we can and be dressed right and feel right inside especially. And that's the way Mullah Hussein felt. Of course, he wasn't thinking about his clothes. He wanted to be ready in his heart by making his thoughts right, by thinking as the promised one, the beloved promised one, would want him to think when he met him, and by doing what he would want him to do. So Mullah Hussein went to a place where it was very quiet, so he could pray and meditate. And there he and his companion stayed for 40 days. At the close of the 40 days, they started out to find the promised one. They stopped at a city nearby, and there they had a beautiful experience. Several years before that, the Bab had lived in that very city. And of course, the Bab spent much time there praying. And these prayers of the Bab had made the city different from other cities, so that when Mullah Hussein entered the city, he could feel this atmosphere, the difference. Isn't that wonderful? And doesn't it show you what prayer can do? Of course, the Bab had left the city by that time. I mean, he wasn't there when Mullah Hussein and his companions arrived. So they didn't stay there. They knew he was some woman and a green turban. Who was he? What was his name? Well, Mullah Hussein didn't know that he was the Bab like we did. He didn't know that it was the promised one, the very one for whom he had been searching all this time. Mullah Hussein thought this young man must be a friend of Said Kazim, who had heard about Mullah Hussein and had come out to meet him. The young man put his arms around Mullah Hussein as if he had known him all his life, and then he invited him to come into his home and rest. But Mullah Hussein told the young man that his friends would be expecting them. "Commit them to the care of God," answered the young man, "and God will surely protect them and watch over them." The young man was so gentle and so loving that Mullah Hussein must have been happier than he'd ever been in all of his life. The Bab took Mullah Hussein to a small house where he knocked on the door. An Ethiopian servant let them in, and the Bab himself brought water and poured it for his visitor to wash his hands. And then they prayed together. And in his prayer, in his heart, Mullah Hussein again asked God, "Please help me find the promised one." You see, he didn't know that he was right in the presence of the promised one then, the Bab. And he's praying to God, "Show me the way." He didn't know that this young man was the one. Now, while they talked, something happened that makes all of us, even now and the years to come, remember that day so many years ago. It was about 2 hours and 11 minutes after sunset that the Bab, with great love and joy, told Mullah Hussein who he was. And Mullah Hussein was so astonished that at first he could not believe the good news. But as the Bab went on talking, Mullah Hussein knew that no one else could be so wise, could give such answers. And he knew this must be the Bab, the promised one. And what do you think? The time passed so quickly that they had talked all night long, and it was morning, and Mullah Hussein couldn't believe it. He didn't know it until he heard the morning call to prayer. "This night," the Bab told him, "will in the days to come be celebrated as one of the greatest of all festivals." You see, this was the very first time that the Bab, the promised one, had told anyone on this whole earth who he was. Wouldn't it have been wonderful to have been the one he told, like Mullah Hussein? Before Mullah Hussein left, the Bab told him that he was the first to believe in him. Later, 18 souls would find him, just as Mullah Hussein had done. But he was to tell no one about the Bab, for each one of them must find him for himself. And when all 18 had learned the great secret, he would send them out to tell the whole world that a new teacher had come. The Bab's name, as you know, means the gate. And Mullah Hussein was called the Babul Bab, or the gate of the gate, because he was the very first one to hear. And as Mullah Hussein left the Bab, he was so excited and so happy that he trembled and he could hardly walk. He couldn't wait to meet his brother and his nephew and his companions. And people who saw him must have wondered, what happened to that young man? Look at his face, how it shines. Well, of course, Mullah Hussein saw the Bab many times after that, but you may be sure he kept the great secret. He wouldn't tell anybody until the right time came. And you know something? I was in that wonderful room where Mullah Hussein first met the Bab. I sat in the very spot where Mullah Hussein sat, and I looked across the room where Mullah Hussein must have looked upon the face of the Bab, the blessed Bab, the promised one, the messenger of God. Just think of that. In Shiraz, the city of blue tile fountains and nightingales, wonderful, magical place, the birthplace of the Baha'i faith, and it just is beautiful. I hope you go there someday, too, and that you'll visit that very room where that magic moment took place and where the Bab said, this night will, in the days to come, be celebrated as one of the greatest of all festivals. And as you know, we do celebrate it now all over the whole world. So next time, we'll hear about some of those wonderful teachers of the early days of the faith. Maybe you can grow up to be like them and to follow in their footsteps. This time, we're going to meet some of those early teachers of the Baha'i faith. In Chapter 5, it is called The Letters of the Living. After Mullah Hussein had found the Bab, he visited him many times. He always went at night so that no one would see him. Because, you remember, the Bab had said that each of these early Letters of the Living must find the Bab for himself. Each day, Mullah Hussein could hardly wait for night to come so that he could be with the Bab. Well, you can imagine how he must have felt. I mean, there's the promised one waiting, and he has to wait the whole day long before the sun goes down and he can go and meet the Bab. No wonder he was impatient. And you know that whenever God sends a new divine teacher to the earth, this promised one picks out some of the people who love him most and who believe in him and who can help him with his work. Sometimes they are called his disciples. When Jesus lived on earth, he had 12 disciples. You probably know that. When the Bab came, he had more than 12. You will soon see how many there were and what he called them. That's what this story now is about. Well, one night the Bab said to Mullah Hussein, "Tomorrow, 13 of your companions will arrive. To each of them extend the utmost loving kindness." And then he told Mullah Hussein to pray to God that God would lead these men also to know the Promised One and to find the Bab. Well, sure enough, the very next morning, 13 friends of Mullah Hussein arrived in the city of Shiraz. One of them, named Ali, noticed that Mullah Hussein was very happy and his face was very radiant, and he thought he must know something. And he didn't seem any longer to be searching for the Promised One, and he suspected that Mullah Hussein had found the Promised One. Ali asked him why he looked this way and seemed so happy. "Have you found the Promised One?" Well, at once he knew that Mullah Hussein indeed had found him. So he begged to be shown the way. But Mullah Hussein shook his head. "Beseech me not, don't ask me," he said, "to grant you this favor. Let your trust be in God, for he will surely guide your steps." The Bab had said that, and Mullah Hussein knew that it was true. Ali told the others about it, and they all prayed to God that he might lead them to the Promised One as soon as possible. On the third night after this, while Ali was praying, he had a vision. A vision, you know, is something like a dream, except that the person who has it may not be asleep. In his vision, Ali seemed to see a light which moved ahead of him, and he saw himself following this light and finding at the end of the light the Promised One. Even though it was in the middle of the night, he got up at once and he went to the home of Mullah Hussein. He threw his arms around him and he told him all about his vision. And of course, Mullah Hussein was very joyous. Praise be to God, he said, who has guided us hither. He was so happy because now another one had found the promised one. So when the morning came, he took Ali to the home of the Bab. In the door stood the Ethiopian servant, who said, "Before daybreak, my master called me and told me to open the door and to stand ready. Two guests are to arrive early this morning," the Bab told me, "and say to them from me, enter in the name of God." Well, the three of them, Mullah Hussein, Ali, they talked with the Bab that morning, and the whole room seemed to be filled with light and joy. They felt that a new and beautiful day indeed had come to the world. And each of Ali's 12 companions also found the Bab. Some dreamed about him, some had a vision of him while they were praying, and others while they were thinking of him, all of them. And so it went until 17 had found the Bab and become his disciples. That means that they were ready to go out now and tell the world about the new day. The Bab called them letters of the living. One was a woman, a wonderful woman. You'll hear about her later on. Well, one night the Bab said to Mullah Hussein, "Tomorrow night the remaining letter will arrive and will complete the number of my chosen disciples." Doesn't it show how wonderful the Bab was? That he knew exactly ahead of time what was going to happen? The very next evening, as the Bab, followed by Mullah Hussein, was going home, a young man, tired and dusty from long traveling, rushed up and threw his arms about Mullah Hussein. And then he looked over his shoulder and he saw the Bab and he said, "Why do you seek to hide him from me? I can recognize him by his gait." This meant that he knew the Bab was the promised one, even by the majestic and wonderful way he walked. Mullah Hussein asked the young man, "Wait a moment," he said, "wait here." Then he hurried over to the Bab and he told him about this young traveler. "Marvel not," the Bab said, "at his strange behavior. We know him already. Indeed, we have awaited his coming. Summon him to our presence." And so the young man, the last of the letters of the living, was greeted with great joy. The name of this young man was Qudus. And now there were 18 letters of the living ready to go out and tell the coming of the promised one. And that's the way it is with the promised ones. I mean, with all the messengers of God, such as Moses and Jesus and Muhammad and Krishna, Buddha, Zoroaster, Baha'u'llah, all of the wonderful prophets are messengers. It's an important time in the world, the beginning of a new day when they come. And I think we should hear more about this promised one, the Bab, don't you? I mean, he was the forerunner of Baha'u'llah. He was the herald of the Baha'i faith. His name was the Bab, B-A-B, as we said before, it means the gate. And we're going to open that gate to the whole world. Boy, I just wish it were next time, right now. Well, here's that moment that I promised you. This time we're going to talk about the promised one, the Bab. This is chapter 6, and it's called The Story of the Bab. Of course, although the Bab was the promised one whom God had sent to tell people about the new day, he came to the earth as a little baby, just like all of us must come. And no one knew that he was the promised one until he was 25 years old. His father and mother died when he was very young, and he went to live with his uncle. There were no schools such as you would go to now, and no books to study except the Quran. His uncle put him in the charge of a man who taught him from the Quran. And from the very first, the Bab learned so fast that his teacher just couldn't understand it. One day, the teacher asked the Bab to recite the first lines of the Quran. And the little boy said that he couldn't recite them unless he knew what they meant. wishing to see what the little boy would do, the teacher pretended not to know what the words meant. "I know what these words signify," the Bob as a little boy said, "and by your leave, I will explain them." And the Bob told the class about these words in such a wise way and in such clear words that his teacher was astonished. And he knew then that the Bob didn't need a teacher. The very next day he took the boy to his uncle's office. And he said, "I have brought him back to you. He cannot be treated as a little child, for in him is a mysterious power." The Bob's uncle, however, didn't wish him to stop studying. He looked sternly at the little boy, and he told the Bob that he must do just as the other children did, sit quietly and listen carefully to every word spoken by his teacher. Well, the Bob promised to do this and returned to his school. But the Bob couldn't be like the other children. I mean, his soul knew all of the things without being taught. And finally, his uncle took him out of school and let him help him in his business. Some years after this, the Bob was married and a little boy was born to him. He was named Ahmed. Well, you can imagine how the father and mother loved him. But one day, while Ahmed was very little, he was taken sick and he died. Of course, his mother and father missed him a very great deal. But in spite of this, the Bob couldn't feel sad, for he knew that God had a place for his small son, and he prayed that someday he too might die in such a way that it would show his love for God and for everyone. And of course, God answered the Bob's prayer. In another story, you'll hear about how the Bob died, about his heroic martyrdom. In Persia, the country where the Bob lived, the summer is very, very hot. Of course, this didn't keep the Bob from praying many hours a day from the housetops. Their houses are built with flat roofs, where people can sit in the evening when it is cool. But the Bob could not wait for evening. Every Friday at dawn, he would go up to the roof and pray until the sun arose. At noon, when the sun was hottest, the Bob would go up to pray again. And he would be so deep in his prayer that he didn't seem to feel the burning rays of the sun at all. And here he would stay until late afternoon, thinking and praying with a heart full of love and joy. And you know something? He would turn toward the north, toward Tehran, when he said his prayers. He thought of it as the Holy Land, Tehran. Later, as Baha'u'llah said, the mother of the world. For that was the birthplace of Baha'u'llah. Some people thought that when the Bab was praying, he was praying to the sun. But of course, this wasn't true. To him, the sun was a sign of God. The sun sends its light and heat to the earth to make the trees and the flowers and everything grow, doesn't it? I mean, we know that. And in the same way, God sends his love to us to help us grow inside, in the soil of our hearts, and to become more loving in spirit and more like God. That's what the messengers come to tell us. We couldn't live without God's love any more than the flowers or the birds could live without the sunlight. You know, it makes the grass grow and the apples and the fruits and the birds and everything. That's just what the words of the messengers of God, such as the Bab, do for us. Their life is like sunlight. The Bab was a very gentle and kind person to everyone he met. He never wanted anything for himself, but always gave the best of everything to others. It made people perfectly happy just to be near him. And it was the greatest joy in the world to hear the Bob speak. And of course, he was very honest and careful about the things belonging to others, in business and in all things. Here's a story that the people tell about the Bob. They say that one day, while he was in business, a man gave the Bob something to sell for him. The man told the Bob just what the price was to be. When the Bob sent the man the money for his article, which he'd sold, there was more than the man had asked. So the man wrote to the Bob to find out about it. And the Bob wrote back, What I have sent you is entirely your due. There was a time when the trust you had delivered to me had attained this value. Failing to sell it at that price, I now feel it my duty to offer you the whole of that sum. You see, when he did sell the article, it didn't bring so much money as it would have a bit earlier. And the Bob felt that it was his fault because he didn't sell it at that time. So he sent the man the extra money beside that which he had received for the article. Well, I don't think everybody would do that, do you? It's no wonder everybody loved the Bob. Even when he was a little boy, they must have loved him because he could never be unkind to anyone. And the world needs that. Next time, we're going to hear how the Bob helped the world become a better place. And it's something that we can help with, too.